We begin on the oral argument for this afternoon. I wanted to let counsel know that the court has had a discussion about, although counsel is very good about stopping the explanation of the argument you're making when the red light goes on, sometimes, in fact, often, the justices are not very good. And we've been concerned that our own enthusiasm to ask you just one more question could end up with one side getting significantly more argument than the other. And we want the arguments to be fair, and that involves giving you equal time, which is why you start out with 30 minutes aside. So we're going to try very hard today to behave ourselves, and when the red light comes on, be concluded with our questions. So that was something I wanted to let you all know about. So I then will call the last case for today, State versus Dumstry, case number 13-0857. Are you prepared to proceed? Please do.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Mr. Perlman. Thank you for your attention to this very important case. My name is Anthony Cotton. I represent Brett Dumstry, the appellant, in this matter. Your Honors, we're here today because the Court of Appeals affirmed Judge Hassan and ruled against Mr. Dumstry. And it's our position that the Court of Appeals, in reaching its conclusion, misapplied or failed to apply the Dunn factors. What we're here today to decide is whether or not an underground parking garage that Mr. Dumstry keeps his vehicle in, a secure garage with locked doors, we're here to decide whether or not that area is curtilage, such that it should be offered or afforded some measure of constitutional protection.
Are we here to decide whether there's a reasonable expectation of privacy?
No, Your Honor. I believe the decision today is whether or not the area is curtilage. Because if it is curtilage under, and we can apply the Dunn factors, and that's obviously this Court's function, but in applying the Dunn factors, that will give us the answer of whether or not the area is curtilage. And if it is curtilage, then Mr. Dumstry would have a suppression remedy because the police physically intruded into that area.
If it isn't curtilage, then do we proceed analytically to an analysis of a reasonable expectation of privacy?
Yes, and that's our gripe, so to speak, with the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals paid lip service to the Dunn factors. The Court of Appeals mentioned the Dunn factors, but I think the only judge who really applied the Dunn factors was Judge Riley in his dissent. Of course, if this Court rules that the Dunn factors don't result in a curtilage finding, then we would proceed under a Katz reasonable expectation of privacy analysis, Your Honor. So the Dunn factors have been recited at length in our briefs and in our arguments to Your Honors, but I submit that each one of those factors cuts in favor of Mr. Dumstry. We're talking about a situation in April 20th where it was dark outside, and Mr. Dumstry is driving home, and he's confronted by somebody who does not appear to be a police officer. The officer DeJarlis, as it later turned out to be, was a police officer, but Officer DeJarlis confronted him in the streets of Waukesha as he was trying to get home from a Brewer game. Turns out that Officer DeJarlis was also coming home from a Brewer game that night, having consumed, as he put it, a couple beers. And as he engaged Mr. Dumstry, I think acting somewhat sensibly, continued to drive to his apartment complex to avoid this interaction. He didn't know who he was dealing with. And he made it into his underground garage. When he opened the garage, we didn't draw pictures or submit pictures at the trial court level, so I'll do the best job I can to paint a picture, but it's basically a 30-unit apartment building, and it's unclear from the record how many people actually resided in that building, but we know it's about a 30-unit building, approximately 30 stalls underneath. And it's a locked building. It's a locked garage. It's secure. It can't be viewed from the outside. It's certainly much different than an open field if we use that. And of course, Your Honors, I recognize that open fields don't need to be, in theory, fields, but it's much different from the open field concept that the Fourth Amendment cases discuss. This is a locked, secure garage. Mr. Dumstry opens up his garage. He gets in. He parks his vehicle, and Officer DeJarlis wedged his car under the door. By doing that, his act of wedging the car under the door prevented the door from closing. The record indicates that it would have been an automatic closing door, so it would have shut at that point, but didn't because of Officer DeJarlis' actions. Officer DeJournalis gets out of his vehicle. He confronts Mr. Gumstree, and he had identified himself as a law enforcement officer. Again, backup officers from the city of Waukesha arrived and eventually arrested Mr. Gumstree for drunk driving.
And was this all inside this garage?
Yes, Your Honor. And this all occurred in the confines of that garage, in the four walls of that building. And so, and I submit that, that Judge Riley really got this right when he endeavored to apply the Dunn factors. Now, this court gets its guidance from the 1987 case of United States versus Dunn, which sets forth four guiding principles for this court to examine when trying to reach these searing question of whether or not this area is curtilage. Fourth Amendment analyses require a careful attention to the facts, a very studious analysis of the details, and the Dunn case provides us with the only guidance as to whether or not an area should be constituted curtilage. And so we look at the first factor, proximity to the home. Mr. Gumstree's parking garage is within the same four-wall structure that his apartment complex is in. This is not, it's not like going to a sporting event at the Kohl Center, for example, where you have a standalone garage that you would have to walk to. This is actually contained within the four walls of Mr. Dumstree's building. And that brings us to the second point, which is whether the area is included in an enclosure surrounding Mr. Dumstree's home. And that also cuts in favor of Mr. Dumstree. This is an underground, secure, locked garage. The nature of the use to which it was put. Mr. Dumstree wasn't using this underground garage to grow marijuana. There's one case that talks about somebody using a barn. Certainly, this wouldn't be the first time we've heard of people using storage sheds and things like that to grow illegal drugs. A person would have a lesser expectation of privacy, and certainly that area would be less likely to be included as curtilage if that's what a person is doing. Mr. Gumstree was using this garage for the same thing that every person in Wisconsin uses their garage for, a safe, secure place to park his vehicle, to shield it from the elements, to shield it from the rain, to shield it from the snow. And so he wasn't doing anything different with his garage than what any one of us would do if we lived in a home with an attached garage. And the fourth factor is the steps taken to protect the area from observation. Again, Mr. Gumstree entered into a contractual relationship with other tenants in that building to pay for the privilege to spend his money for the privilege of parking his car in a secure spot. These cars are, we can use, of course, our common knowledge, but the cars that are parked in an underground garage that can't be viewed from the outside, where there's no windows to look in, where there's no ingress or egress by the general public, that is a much more secure area than had Mr. Gumstree not paid for that privilege and simply parked his car outside in the parking lot surrounding the building. We believe the Court of Appeals got it wrong. The Court of Appeals looked at the Dunn factors, cited the Dunn factors, but then never applied the Dunn factors. But when we look at the application of these principles to the facts of this case, I believe the rule that this court should set is that that underground secure garage in these circumstances, that a person who rents and has their unit in that garage deserves the same measure of constitutional protection that the wealthy homeowner would get over their attached garage. Your Honors, I think
could
that
I,
the...
Counsel, could I ask you a question? The Dunn case involved a search, didn't it?
Yes, the Dunn case involved a search.
Law enforcement officers were looking for some kind of evidence. Is that right?
Right.
What if... they were simply there to make an arrest.
Okay. I think that if we discuss a case like Mr. Dumstree, certainly that would be controlled by Welsh versus Wisconsin, which, because Wisconsin's the only state without a criminal of first offense drunk driving, it's not clear that Mr. Dumstree's arrest record was known at that point, Your Honor. So they would be effectively arresting Mr. Dumstree for a first offense drunk driving. And so the ability of the police to enter into a residence is severely circumscribed on civil matters as it would be on criminal matters, where if they had probable cause to believe evidence of a crime, hot pursuit would probably justify the action.
In Welsh versus Wisconsin, the police went to the door and they got access to the building through permission, but then they went into the bedroom.
Right.
Okay. Now, you're not equating a parking garage with going into a bedroom without consent, are you?
No.
These are salient questions.
I hope so.
What I'm trying to suggest here is that are the done factors, do they really take into account an arrest situation rather than a search situation?
The best way I can answer that is to offer Florida versus Jardines, to Your Honor, or even United States versus Jones, the two most recent, I think they were both Justice Scalia decisions from the United States Supreme Court. And I think both of those cases are very instructive. So in Jardines probably is the most instructive because the Supreme Court has resurrected the trespass arguments, if you will, with respect to a Fourth Amendment analysis. And part of the problem, and I understand where Mr. Perlman's coming from, and I understand where the state's coming from, but a lot of the authority they're relying, in fact, all of the authority they're relying on predates the trespass analysis that the Supreme Court has resurrected in Jones and then extended through Jardines. Essentially, what the Supreme Court has said is that even if you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, if an area is deserving of constitutional protection and the police trespass, then the defendant is entitled to suppression of the evidence derived from that. And I think Your Honor's right that a lot of the authority, when we're trying to graph together different cases to try to reach the ultimate conclusion here of whether this is curtilage. Because I think if this court finds that it's curtilage and it deserves constitutional protection, I think both sides agree that the evidence ought to have been suppressed and Judge Hassan at the circuit court level should be reversed, the Court of Appeals should be reversed.
If you're a police officer, you're looking for me, and I'm in the house, and you knock on the door and say, would you step out a minute, sir? And I do that. Can you arrest me?
If I have probable cause, yes, I can arrest you once you've stepped outside.
Okay. Even if it's curtilage?
Right. Well, if it's curtilage, and as a police officer, if I've illegally invaded, if I've trespassed onto that curtilage, meaning if I've done something, as Justice Scalia said in Jardines, if I do something different than what the ordinary citizen could do, then it would be an illegal arrest if it was done in the curtilage. I can't think of an apt example of how that would occur in the circumstance Your Honor has described, but we know in the Jardines case, for example, the Supreme Court said, the police can certainly go to the front door. They can ring a doorbell. They can ask somebody to come outside. Nobody's quarreling with any of that. They can do it the same way that any Girl Scout could do it, any member of the public could go up to a door. There's an understanding that people will come to your door and ring your bell if they want to interact with you. What the general public can't do is bring a drug dog onto that curtilage, onto that front porch, and have the drug dog start sniffing around. That's clear from Jardines. And I submit that the same reasoning applies to Dumfries case. What Officer DeJarlis did is way beyond what the average citizen would have license or even implied license to do.
Let me ask this. If you go to the facts of the Welch case, we have Mr. Welch driving off side of the road, and then he goes to his house and into his bedroom. Suppose he didn't go into his house. Suppose he just lay down in the backyard. Is curtilage.
Yes.
Laid down next to a tree in the backyard. Is it your position that the officer could not have arrested him if he was in the backyard?
No, in fact, the officer could have arrested him if he had been in the backyard. First, the officer would.
No.
I don't agree that it's that it is curtilage. It comes down to questions of distance and where in the backyard he was and proximity to the home. But there is an area. The officer could arrest him in the circumstance because I guess the facts would really matter, Your Honor. Really, distance from the home, where he is, ability to observe inside the home, would all those factors would matter. And it's just it's such a different fact pattern than what we have with Dumfries' case, which is the police going far beyond what any citizen would be licensed to do. And I think Justice Scalia makes it clear in Jardines that all of the cases we've dealt with previously have applied the Katz analysis. So all the
applied to what?
The CATS, K-A-T-Z, reasonable expectation of privacy analysis. That's been the controlling standard in United States Fourth Amendment jurisprudence for decades. And so all the cases, even Oliver and Cruz Pagan from the First Circuit, these are cases that are really looking at reasonable expectation of privacy. And what the Supreme Court has said in Jones and Jardines is that that test should still exist, but we also enjoy property interest in trespass arguments in these cases as well. And I submit that's what the courts have never analyzed. And the Court of Appeals never analyzed the trespass argument. They never applied the Dunn factors. The Court of Appeals went right back to the CATS analysis of does a person have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Can you describe for me what, if any, impact sharing space with other residents might have on the curtilage analysis?
I think it the unit that we're talking about here is, I believe, deserves more protection than an open field. I believe it deserves more protection than an outdoor parking stall. I believe that it's different than the interior of Mr. Dumpstree's apartment. That's why I think we're struggling with this, perhaps. It's something different. I think that the best thing we can do is apply the Dunn factors, and I agree with Your Honor that the shared space component of it perhaps muddies the water a little bit. And I think if we were looking at reasonable expectation of privacy, if our only analysis, if we didn't have Jones, if we didn't have Jardines, if the only analysis was CATS, I submit that Dumpstree may lose under a CATS analysis because he shares this. He can't exclude the guests of the other tenants, so there's certainly some other people who would have access to the garage. And so I would think he'd have some diminished expectation of privacy. But I think it's disingenuous to say that he has no expectation of privacy. I think that people who enter into these agreements to rent units in this way, to have secure parking, secure storage, do expect that the only people who are going to go through an underground locked garage is going to be the escorted guests of the other tenants. Or the other tenants themselves. And it's I would argue, even more private than a common hallway would be in an apartment building, because in common hallways, a person could buzz and they could be let in, and then they could just wander around inside the common hallway. But we're talking about a locked, secure garage. And I think most people in this day, retired folks, disabled folks, people who can't afford to buy their own homes, there's millions of people who live in multiple family housing. I think those people do enjoy an expectation of privacy that the general public won't go into their garage and that area will be restricted to those with license to be in that area. And I don't think Officer DeJarlis had license to be in there. The state has conceded he's a trespasser. The state took the position, or the Attorney General's office took the position at oral argument that for a constitutional analysis, it would be no different if he drove through the wall or drove through the door or if he wedged his car, because either way it's an open field, and so the police can enter into an open field. And I think that's a dangerous step for this court to take. I think if we do an honest assessment of Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, and we look at the direction that this country has gone, the Fourth Amendment has evolved, and trespass tests have been resurrected, and I think it's very clear that if law enforcement trespass into an area that you have constitutional protection over, suppression is warranted.
Okay, well, now that's where I have a little trouble. I don't think there's a debate here that there was trespass, just like I don't think there's a debate that when the police go into an open field without a warrant, they're trespassing, right?
Right.
But if they go into an open field without a warrant and are trespassing, court has said that does not fall within the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
Why? Because the Fourth Amendment says, and this was true in Jones, explained by Justice Scalia and Justice Sotomayor, the Fourth Amendment says the right of people to be secure in their persons, and this is not security of the person, right?
Well, certainly his person was interfered with once he was inside in the office.
Yeah, well, you've got to get it into the Fourth Amendment. So it's secure in their person, secure in their houses. And the whole point about the open field is that if it's not curtilage, it's not a house. And the open field is not a house, therefore it doesn't fall within house in the Fourth Amendment.
Isn't that right? Even though it's a trespass.
I disagree.
Okay. But that's what the Scalia says. And the next ones are papers and effects. That's why in Jones you can get into the Fourth Amendment because there's a trespass on the car and the car is an effect. I mean, that's what Scalia said.
Okay.
Okay. So tell me how you fit into the Fourth Amendment if you have to get into persons or houses. Which one do you fit into?
This is a house. This is the reason we have a curtilage analysis is because it is associated with the home.
So your argument is this has to be a house if it's going to be protected by the Fourth Amendment, and it's a house because curtilage is defined in the cases as house.
Yes.
So it's not merely the physical building. It's a little bit beyond, and the question is how much beyond.
Right, and the Dunn factors give us the steps that we need to engage in to reach that conclusion. I would submit also, if we look at Jardines, for example, this is the front porch of a house. It wasn't secure. It wasn't locked. It wasn't underground. It wasn't shielded from the public. And the court found that there was a trespass when the police went onto the front porch and did something that an ordinary citizen would not be authorized to do. And it's the exact same thing that Officer DeJarlis did in this case, Justice Abramson. He entered into the curtilage, the underground garage, by wedging his car into there and blocking the sensor and preventing that door from closing. And but for those actions, law enforcement wouldn't have been able to enter that building.
Mr. Cotton, let me ask you this. Does it make any difference that this is an apartment building rather than a condominium? Would that be significant?
I don't think so, because I think even the case law is clear that overnight guests would have a suppression remedy even if they had no ownership or rental interest in a property. Anybody who's an overnight guest would still be afforded to constitutional protection within the area they inhabit. So I don't think that the rental dimension matters, Your Honor.
Counsel, I need a little clarification of your argument. Perhaps I misunderstood. The first paragraph of Judge Riley's dissent includes the following. The state acknowledged at oral argument that if the garage door had closed before DeJarlis broke the security sensor, it would have been unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment for the state to forcibly break down the garage door to search, seize, Dumb Street.
I might have misunderstood that.
Yeah, I heard you say something different.
I did, and I correct that. If that's the record will stand what was said at oral argument, but we do use a reasonable analysis when we look at Fourth Amendment issues.
Yes, so just so that I am clear, you do not dispute what Judge Riley had as oral argument. Maybe I'll ask, of course, the progenitor of these comments himself, but you said something differently in your argument now, and I just wanted that clarified.
Right. And so I think for the Fourth Amendment analysis, whether he had broken down the garage, whether DeJarlis had driven through it or used a sledgehammer to it, or whether he wedged his car under it, either way he's gaining access to that building as a trespasser. Either way he's doing what the general public is not authorized to do. If somebody were to follow any one of us into an apartment building that we live in as the door is closing, and they wedge their car underneath there and jump out of the vehicle, and they're wearing civilian clothes, I think anybody would at that point consider that person a trespasser and a lawbreaker. And that goes far beyond what the police are authorized to do, and I think suppression is required under Jardines, Your Honor.
If the decision is that this is not curtilage, if it's not a house, and even though it's a trespass, it's not under the Fourth Amendment, how does the concept of reasonable expectation of privacy come in?
Well, certainly I think tenants in multi-unit buildings have an expectation of privacy. I think they believe that their cars will be secure, that the area will be secure, they contract for it, they pay money to have the privilege of parking their car in that area.
But if it's not a house, how does it fit under the Fourth Amendment?
Well, if Your Honor is asking under the CATS framework about reasonable expectation of privacy, I think people do expect that their underground secure garage will be a secure area.
Even if it's not a house.
And therefore, it fits
under the Fourth Amendment, even if it's not a house.
I think it deserves Fourth Amendment protection because this is an area that fits the Dunn factors, as the Supreme Court said.
That's because you think it's curtilage.
Right. I think it's an area that's connected to the home. It's tethered by an elevator.
I understand that. But if you lose on that ground, I want to know, do you still have an argument under reasonable expectation of privacy?
I think it's a very difficult argument for Gumtree under reasonable expectation of privacy.
You think it's a difficult one?
Yes. I think that it's a much weaker argument under reasonable expectation of privacy because he shares it with multiple people, and there's multiple tenants who have access to it.
What's your best curtilage case for property that's shared with other tenants?
The property that shares what?
I didn't hear that.
What is your best curtilage case law, where the property isn't the individual's apartment, but it's property that's shared with other tenants, like a parking garage or like a mail room or a laundry area or a who knows where?
I would ask this court to reaffirm the principles of Conrad that this court established 20 or 30 years ago, Conrad versus State, where this court looking at Watkins said that the storage unit within the apartment building was clearly curtilage, even though it had access to the general public had access to it and people could get in there. So I would point to Conrad. But I would also say that Dunn really sets forth the factors for this court to apply in deciding whether or not the area is curtilage.
Many state employees are authorized to park in what we call General Executive Facility 1 parking, which is below a state office building. Now, the general public is not allowed in there. It is controlled access. You have to have special equipment to open the door. Does that receive the same kind of protection?
Justice Prosser, Chief Justice Rogensack, I see my time is up.
Can yes, you may answer, please.
So I think that a person who parks in a secure area deserves some measure of constitutional protection over that area. I think that a person who has the privilege of being in a secure spot, who's contractually entered into arrangement to have a secure spot, deserves some constitutional protection. I think that to treat it as an open field, which would be deserving of no constitutional protection, I believe eviscerates the purpose and the principles of the Fourth Amendment.
I'm going to follow up on that, if
yes,
I may.
Please.
I have in my mind the areas that are discussed with regard to protection under the Fourth Amendment. Open field, it may be trespass, but it is not an area protected.
Right.
Curtilage and the house. Now, curtilage gets its protection because of the factors set forth and done and its relationship to the house. Curtilage to what? Curtilage to office? No. Curtilage to the bank, the U.S. bank? No. So under what theory is there a constitutional protection in a state-owned parking lot like the one described by Justice Prosser? Doesn't fall under those three things. Where's your authority for that?
I guess it would just depend on what the specific – we're just dealing with facts that are really attenuated from Dumtree's case, but it would depend on what law enforcement did in that structure. If they intruded on the car, certainly that's an effect that the Supreme Court has recognized has some degree of protection.
Sure, the car is. That's right, no doubt.
Right.
But the area itself?
I think that the area wouldn't be considered curtilage for purposes of what we're dealing with here, but the area would still I think we still have to engage in a reasonableness analysis as to whether or not law enforcement acted reasonably, because that's sort of at the core of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, sure it is, but you also have a threshold question of if it's even protected area, right?
And I would submit that if Mr. Dumtree were driving into his office, he might not have a leg to stand on, and this court wouldn't have granted the case. But I certainly believe in his residence he has protection, Your Honor. Thank you. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Justices. My name is Dave Perlman. I'm the Assistant Attorney General of the State of Wisconsin. I represent the state in this case. To clarify things a little bit, in my view, Dumtree has two avenues in which he could prevail. The first is if he can establish that an underground parking area that he shares with 29 other tenants that is not connected contiguously or physically to his home and for which he does not engage in any of the intricacies of family life is curtilage. If it is curtilage, then under Jones, he would prevail because it's a trespass onto a well-recognized constitutional area. His second avenue, one that the court seems to have more appetite for than does Mr. Cotton, is that he could have a reasonable expectation of privacy, even if it is not curtilage. Those are the two avenues. We'll discuss curtilage first. You know, when I argued this case, along with Mr. Cotton, at the Court of Appeals, Judge Brown stopped me in my tracks with a very interesting comment. He said, "Dave, you, Mr. Perlman, you keep referring to this as open fields. It's a parking lot. Isn't open fields a funny term for that?" And I said, "Well, semantically you're correct, but legally that's what we're stuck with." So for the court's indulgence, I've come up with a new term for what I think this parking area represents. The acronym would be CUPIS, Constitutionally Unprotected Privately Owned Space. It's space that he privately owns, but it's not constitutionally protected. To be curtilage, you can't have the argument that the home is more secure than his curtilage. And Mr. Cotton made that argument. He was arguing that it's different than the front living room of his house. Well, in a curtilage analysis, it wouldn't be. It's given the same constitutional protection as a home. The Oliver case, which set this all forth, talks about the activities, the family activities. It says it's the land immediately surrounding the house. This is not such land. This is not immediately surrounding the house. This is land shared with 2,900 people. This is getting out of the car. This is walking through the parking lot. This is getting into a hallway. This is getting into an elevator. This is getting off the elevator and getting to your house. I don't think curtilage works like the state of Michigan, where it's broken up into several parts. It should be contiguous.
It's contiguous if it is, and I think of cases where there is a parking garage, but then a breezeway to the house.
Right.
Curtilage?
Yes. And we had the case of, yes, United States, not United States, I got too global there, that state of Wisconsin versus Davis with those particular facts. Mm-hmm. And the reason that is, it's all connected. If you look at the illustration that the court showed, it's like part of the house structure itself.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, a court once wrote, and I wish I could tell you which court, it said that an attached garage is so obviously curtilage because of its physical structure being part of the house, it almost shouldn't even have a Dunn analysis. It makes no sense. It is curtilage. I would argue almost the corollary here. This is so not curtilage, so removed from the actual living space that he has, that the Dunn analysis is awkward to apply.
Well, in some ways, I think for law enforcement, we need some clear rules. Let's say the parking spot in question is right in front of a door.
Okay.
You open the door, there is a 8-foot breezeway, and then you open the door to the condo or apartment. Sounds to me that's a lot like the Davis case, breezeway between the parking spot and the dwelling. But of course, law enforcement isn't going to know when they're coming in necessarily, is it going to be an 8-foot breezeway? Is it going to be a hallway and an elevator?
Yes, but I think law enforcement can make some basic conclusions. One of the things about Davis and the breezeway is all part of a single family home. There were not other people, possibly strangers to him, who could let people in and let people out. In what you described, and I think the law is very clear that every curtilage case is very fact-specific. What your Honor describes, it appears that it would be part of a single family situation where all the steps lead to the house, and there's nobody in between who can let people in or not let
Yet
people in.
Yet it's a 30-space parking.
30-space parking garage, I think at that point, I don't see where curtilage.
You don't see what?
I don't see how you can make a curtilage definition in a parking lot shared with 29 other people.
Well, let me segue to what I read before.
see if it's correct. The state acknowledged at oral argument that if the garage door had closed before DeJarlis broke the security sensor, it would have been unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment for the state to forcibly break down the garage door to search or seize Dumstree.
I did make a concession similar to that, and I'm going to stand by it in a moment, but I just want to say that Justice Riley, I think, was in error when he said there's no difference between that and destroying the opening mechanism, which was not done in this case. I believe that when he balanced what was going on and what the officer's actions were, that there was a reasonableness that would not be present if the officer was going to drive, as it was put to me, and smash through the garage door. Fourth Amendment jurisprudence is grounded with reasonableness as its touchstone, and I didn't think that that was reasonable. Well, not changing my opinion that it doesn't transform that area into curtilage.
You know, let me take out of the question smashing through the door, because that's not in paragraph one of Judge Riley's opinion. And maybe he, with all due respect, maybe he has it accurate or maybe he doesn't. That's why I am asking you.
Yes.
It would have been unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment for the state to forcibly break down the garage to search Dumstree. That's
right.
It is, as I understand the facts, the officer stopped, the off-duty officer,
yes,
stopped his vehicle underneath the garage door to deactivate the security system so that the on-duty officer would be able to enter. Is that correct?
Correct.
So, of what import is having a security system surrounding or part of this 30-stall garage? I mean, secure from what, I guess, is what, for me, begs the question. He's deactivating security. Any import in the analysis?
Yes, I would think no. I think it is very significant in terms of security of the building in whole. I don't think it has much import from a Fourth Amendment analysis. I don't think that the fact that that was a secured up-and-down garage door morphed that communal area into curtilage.
Does it, if anything, does it apply to the fourth Dunn test, attempt to exclude from sight or exclude the public?
Well, the problem with, again, the Dunn test is an awkward application here, just as it's an awkward application for an attached garage, which is so obviously curtilage. But I would argue no, because you still have 2,900 people who are observing everything that you are doing. And that is the problem. It's you can't. You don't have enough control. You don't have enough dominion. You can't exclude other people from peering into your business. It's just not a place where I think people feel private. It is not a place where people feel they are at home. They're getting close to home, but they are not at home.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
But it is a place where people expect non-invitees to be excluded.
Well, they have no control over that. Strangers could invite people they don't like. Strangers could invite the police. Strangers could invite
that's right. If they can,
salespeople.
Any of the 29, other 29, can
right.
get consent. There's no consent here. But don't you think there, and perhaps this touches upon the expectation of privacy, but a non-invitee, if there were a stranger that any one of those other 29 could contact the police and have that stranger removed.
Yes, but I don't see where the right to do that changes us into curtilage.
No, that's why I said I prefaced it with reasonable expectation of privacy.
Right.
My guess is none of these 30, the owners of these 30 stalls expect non-invitees to be in that secured underground garage.
They may not hope for it, but frankly, and I have lived in these kind of areas, as probably many people here have as well, that when there's that many people living with me, I can't control who they have coming in or not coming in. The only, my ultimate control is to continue to stay in the apartment or not.
Yes, but you can, if you think there is a non-invitee, you can get that person removed.
But I can do that if I don't like somebody walking on my front sidewalk. It doesn't change something into an area of an expectation of privacy or an area that's curtilage. I always have the right to call the police when I think I'm observing behavior that compromises my safety.
Well, isn't this like Jardine? That front porch and front door is an open welcome to anyone who has legitimate business, had business there. If I had a dog and I was visiting or was a Girl Scout trying to sell cookies and brought my dog, perfectly okay. But when the police came and they were okay when they knocked on the door, they were okay where they were standing. But when they brought a dog to sniff, that went too far. And even though it was curtilage, they were out, and even though there wasn't a trespass.
Well,
so why isn't this where you have 30 shared spots, 30 shared people? They're all agreeing everybody who's there legitimately invited is okay, but no cops.
Florida v. Jardines did not say the police officers trespassed when they went on the porch. It was the introduction of the dog. I would respectfully disagree with Your Honor. I'm not sure that a Girl Scout bringing a large, mastiff dog to the front door would be something that would be contemplated even by the Jardines Court. It's the introduction of a dog, which is a little bit different and a little bit abusive of the normal invitement of a front door.
Wouldn't be a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, because they're citizens. Yeah. But the point is, Jardines is the reverse of our case. Jardines was a non-trespass into a curtilage as far as the police officer was concerned. It was the dog who trespassed. In our case, I'm saying we have trespass into a non-curtilage, or to use my vernacular, a constitutionally unprotected, privately owned space.
Well, you're saying it's the dog trespass. Clearly, the Jardine said it was just the officer there, front door area,
no problem.
But it's the officer there with the dog for the purpose of obtaining information that transformed this, right?
But again, the front porch was considered in Jardines to be curtilage, and it is trespass to curtilage. That's what that case is. Here we have trespass to non-curtilage, I submit, because I do not believe that a communally shared 30-lot parking lot is the same as a front porch to a home.
I need to ask you the same question I asked Mr. Cotton, because I'm just not getting it out of Conrad. When I've read through that and looked through it again, I just am not seeing where Conrad stands for the proposition that a storage room in a basement of an apartment building is curtilage, because it cites to Watkins, and Watkins actually found the opposite of that. So at the risk of having you argue against yourself, what is the best case you can think of for common area where 30 or so people have access to it, where that's curtilage? Can you give me something? Is there anything?
Well, not that I'm so proud that I won't argue against myself, but I cannot come up with one because I don't think one can be come up with. I don't believe that a communally shared space is curtilage. And I read Conrad and Watkins in combination the same way Your Honor did. And Your Honor asked Mr. Cotton specifically, how does the fact that there's so many other people involved affect your curtilage analysis? And I think it affects it dramatically. He talked about enclosure, and he's probably stronger there. But the biggest, the gravamen of curtilage is where we do our intimate family activities. And I don't think we do that when there's 29 other people who are involved in the same process. I don't view curtilage as a share toy. And that would be like 30 little curtilages in that garage. So I cannot come up with that case because I don't think such a case can be come up with. So it illustrates my seminal point that it's not curtilage. On the expectation of privacy, and here I will argue slightly against myself, I respectfully disagree with my colleague. This is probably, to me, in two weak arguments, this is a stronger one, is the expectation of privacy. But the problem I have here, this I'm very bad at the pronunciation of this case, Trakaki, it was cited in the Court of Appeals, talks about reasonable expectation of privacy. One of the big things is dominion and control. And there's no dominion. There's no control. Anything can go on. And it's just not an area where I would feel comfortable or would average person would feel comfortable engaging in private activity. It is, and when dealing with this, Judge Riley came up with the fact that the intimate family usages was shelter from the environment, and safety. Those are legitimate reasons, but they're not what the family gathers around the hearth for. You're not going to have picnics there. You're not going to have a birthday party in that 30 communal parking area. It's not contiguous in terms of land to it. And to me, it's private, but it's constitutionally unprotected.
Is it your position that if it's not curtilage, you can still have a reasonable expectation of privacy that's covered by the Fourth Amendment?
I think there are areas such. I would submit that one area that where you would not have a curtilage but be a reasonable expectation of privacy, and I hope this does not throw all of my colleagues under the bus as I come up with a hypothetical, but for instance, let us say in the same parking lot we each had private storage areas with lock and key. That area I would not say is curtilage, and I would not engage in intricate family activity there. But I think there's an expectation of privacy because I have complete control. I have complete dominion. Nobody can see that. So that would be an area I would not call curtilage, but would not be the home, but for which I would have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Yeah, but where does it fit under the Fourth Amendment? Is it a person?
Things.
Not houses because it's not curtilage.
Things.
Papers. Effects.
Effects.
Mr. Perlman, I understood you to say that if something is curtilage, the same rules apply for a seizure as apply to a search. Did I misunderstand you?
I'm maybe misunderstanding you. Could you give me a more example? I'm a little confused.
Let's say
there are two different things, of course, but
we have a private home.
Yes.
We have curtilage around that home.
Yes, sir.
If you have probable cause to arrest somebody,
yes,
the police do, and they cannot go into the home except in unusual circumstances.
Yes.
Are you saying that they cannot make an arrest of the person outside the home in the curtilage?
You know, you gave this example to Mr. Cotton. Let me see if I remember it correctly. And that was a person coming back, maybe intoxicated or whatever, lying in his backyard. Clearly, you want, for the purpose of this argument, it was clearly the curtilage of the backyard. Am I saying the police could not intrude there and make the arrest? And I would say without a warrant, that would be a problem. It's the curtilage. It's their home. You need the warrant, even though they're kind of assuming it is the curtilage. Now, there's factual disputes as to whether that's the curtilage or not. But
what's the authority for that?
Well, my authority would be that the curtilage is given the same constitutional protection as the home. When the doctrine of the curtilage developed and evolved, that's been its main thrust. So it's given the same constitutional protection of a home. The way you get it is the same way you get with a home, with an arrest, with a consent, with probable cause and exigent circumstances, with community caretaker.
Do you think the analysis of roommates and common area that roommates share would have any
that can be
role here?
That's a little more difficult, and again, case by case. When you police enter into a roommate situation, they're certainly not going to be allowed to search the area exclusive to the non-target roommate.
That's right.
But they would be able to get in if they had a justification for the target roommate.
I'm not sure why the 29 other potential people or parking stalls matters as we struggle to find the answer as to whether this is curtilage. You have cases where the front porch obviously is curtilage, but it is open to the public. Jardines is a case where it's curtilage, but it's open to the public. Other people can come and go. So,
well,
why does that play in your argument such an important role?
I would give it probably my number one, but it certainly has support. Again, the structure of it, it's not contiguous with the home, is the second argument that I make, because of curtilage is not really surrounding the home. But the difference is, in a front porch, It's my house, and while people can come and ring the doorbell, it's got a very short shelf life as to how long they can do that. I have control and dominion of my home, and the fact that anybody comes by my front porch does not compromise that. I have no control and dominion when I'm sharing a parking lot with 29 other people. And that is the core. The core of curtilage is intimate family activities. If you do that, you should get the same protection as the home. You just don't do it, or reasonably don't do it, in a communal parking lot.
How broad is the definition of intimate family activities?
I don't think broad enough to include protection from the elements or protection from your own security. I would say
Broad enough to include a storage bin under certain circumstances, just that you gave in your hypothetical.
Well, that was for a reasonable expectation of privacy and not for curtilage.
Fair enough. Thank you.
So it's interesting, an interesting question as to how far the family activities can spread and still stay within curtilage's orbit, but I would say it's not strained here. When the only reason we park cars just isn't an intimate family activity. It's a necessary one, but not intimate.
It does protect your effects, the effect being the car, if it's a secure garage, and the car is protected under the Fourth Amendment. But something in, I guess it was one of the opinions in Jardine or Jones that indicated, okay, we're dealing with the Fourth Amendment, 18th century, 19th century, rural, few apartment houses, if any. In private property, some tenants, shareholders, and crop sharing. Now we're a totally different society, and we have to put the Fourth Amendment into a society where home ownership may not be the majority anymore. That includes even condos and co-ops, where it's significantly urbanized, we have shared common areas, whether they be hallways or garages. And should you apply the Fourth Amendment in such a way that you're only protecting those that can afford single-family attached garages?
Well, the courts have explored this and have held that it's true that the curtilage area is probably more liberally construed in a rural one-family residence than it is in an urban apartment sprawl complex. I guess that's just the realities of that kind of living. There are pluses and minuses in that kind of living. In a condominium, other people will shovel your walk and mow your lawn, but maybe one of the concessions is a slight loss of privacy. We have that all the time in the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment is a continuum. It's a murky thing. It moves, it goes forward, it goes backwards, it reflects with society. And there are times where society will unite up and have a release of some of Fourth Amendment protections, an airport coming to mind. So these are things that happen. So in an apartment complex sprawl, you're giving up some of your Fourth Amendment privacy rights in exchange for other things that happen. But I wouldn't say you're being singled out. Your apartment is still immune from police. I believe there's a little curtilage around the apartment, maybe the welcome mat or whatever. If you have one of those lovely back porches, you've got that going on for curtilage. It just isn't the parking area. And then I would argue the reverse. Why should a rich person who can afford enclosed parking have greater protections than a person with an open parking lot? So we can't really look upon this as a meritocracy. It just is. The Fourth Amendment's applicability.
Just apply the Dunn rules.
Well, it's a very flexible rule. I think it's, if handled correctly by both law enforcement and the courts and defense lawyers, it becomes a very important part of our life and a very important part of our Constitution.
Is it highly manipulable?
Excuse me?
Is it highly manipulable? Manipulable. That is, you can reach any decision you want to reach when you apply.
Not as cynical as that. I think that there are basic tenets But when you think about it, James Madison came up with the Fourth Amendment. He probably wasn't thinking of telephones. He probably wasn't thinking of computers. But he was thinking of bedrock principles that can be applied as the world changes. And I just submit that that can happen. We've seen that with cell phones, and we've seen that in airports in two different ways, where the Fourth Amendment is restricted and the Fourth Amendment is expanded. But I'm not uncomfortable in the communal parking lot system that it's very difficult to imagine curtilage happening.
Mr. Perlman, I was frankly impressed by Mr. Cotton's phrasing of the issue here, which included language that probable cause to arrest for a crime and exigent circumstances were required for the City of Waukesha police officer to conduct a warrantless entry. But you seem to be on a very, very different page from this.
Well, I hope that you're being impressed with Mr. Cotton doesn't have the flip side of being unimpressed with my argument. But that aside, I would just say this. What I'm doing here is evaluating the Fourth Amendment's applicability. And in my opinion, the police entered an area for which you have no expectation of privacy and is not curtilage. In such a circumstance, the Fourth Amendment and its contours and its requirements are not involved. So the officers would not need probable cause plus exigent circumstances, the same way they would not need it to go on open fields, even if there was a no trespassing sign on the fields.
Let me just ask the question somewhat differently. Why aren't you arguing that there are exigent circumstances here, or that the officer was in hot pursuit? Then you get rid of all this stuff. It's an exception to the Fourth Amendment, even if the Fourth Amendment applied. You got hot pursuit. This guy is fleeing from the officer, trying to get in. We have other cases where a person runs into the house to get away from the officer, right? And the question is, can the officer follow him in anyway? We've said yes in certain circumstances. So why isn't this one really easily resolved under hot pursuit or exigent circumstances? I mean, this court has written the exigent circumstances very broadly, in my opinion.
That's a fair question, Your Honor, but my answer is this. I did not feel there was probable cause, which is necessary with exigent circumstances. I felt the officer had reasonable suspicion plus probable cause does not get you in to the home. As far as the hot pursuit, I thought about that long and hard, and even during questioning by Judge Riley, I conceded that I would not have acted differently than Dumstreet did in many ways in this case. I would have been confused by some civilian pointing to a badge saying, I'm a police officer, repeatedly doing so, but still be confused by it. And that's why the hot pursuit angle for me was inappropriate, because I don't think he understood it, and nor should he have understood what he was being pursued by. So the reason I didn't use it was twofold. One, I don't think we had hot pursuit, because I don't think he knew it was an officer. And secondly, we didn't have the requisite probable cause, which would allow for the warrantless entry into the home, and which is necessary if you're going to use exigent circumstances as your bootstrap to get in.
So you need probable cause for exigent circumstances?
In my view, yes, for entry into that zone.
I want to get once more.
Yes.
The defendant in the Payton case is sitting in a rocking chair on the front porch of his unscreened front porch of his house. You're saying that the police may not arrest him?
No, on the front porch. I think in your hypothetical, you had him inside, and then you asked him to step outside, and they made the arrest. In the front porch area, I think they could. Two grounds they could. One, under the language of Jardines, and also our Court of Appeals in Edgeburg, again, said if that's the only way you can make access to the front door to go into the front porch, the police have a right to be there. So front porch, yes. You were talking about the body lying or the person sleeping it off in the backyard.
But you indicated to Justice Bradley that a front porch is curtilage.
Yes.
Which I believe.
Yes.
And let's say this is the way to the door, but the rocking chair is over here on the front porch. And I think I understood you to say that Peyton couldn't be arrested there.
No, I think I was. If I did say that, I was in error. I was saying there are two places where I would feel the arrest would be no good without a warrant. One, inside the house, or two, to be in the backyard area, which has no implied permission to enter. And the front porch under Jardines has that implication of permission to enter, so the police could be there, hence they could make the arrest.
Well, if it isn't, I'm just going to ask one more question. Isn't there under Jardines the language, when he talked, discussing, you know, the Girl Scouts being there.
Just for a second, Chief Justice, the light is...
Yes, please, please. Thank you. Doesn't that language, and I can pull it up in 30 seconds, but I don't want to take the time, indicate that it's different, though, if there's an officer there with a warrant, and you're talking about Jardines, the front porch area. I mean,
if an officer has an arrest warrant, it's a whole different dynamic.
Sure. Implied license, then. There's no implied invitation.
Well, it's trumped by the warrant, which has the probable cause, which protects us in itself.
It's your position, following Justice Prosser's question, that if someone is in a front porch that's enclosed, that you don't need a warrant to go there for the search or the arrest?
Oh, you would need a warrant for the search, but in terms of...
Not for the arrest, you don't think so.
It would depend.
Yeah.
It would depend if there's a doorbell outside the screen, so the State v. Edgeburg facts are met.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
I didn't mean to suggest that means you could start searching areas. And when you search areas, now you're exposing different...
Yeah, but even going into a front porch, depending on the structure, the nature of the front porch, may not be authorized under warrant.
May not be authorized, right. And that's why we train as much as possible to have the arrest warrant, so you're not facing that particular hurdle. Thank you very much.
Why did you phrase the question the way you did?
You're going to ask me that, Your Honor, and because I think that's the central question in the case. If this is an area that is the equivalent of Mr. Dumstry's home, it's connected, it's enclosed, it's secluded, it's secure, it's locked, has all the features that it has more features than the front porch has in terms of being able to exclude the public and be in secrete into. So the question really then would become, did the police officer have probable cause coupled with exigent circumstances in order to effect that entry, and it's been conceded that he didn't. I thought that was the cleanest way to frame it, Your Honor. And I think what Your Honors have to do, I think it was Justice Bradley that said it's important to set clear guidelines for law enforcement. I agree it is. We all, certainly at the trial court level, we all work with police officers who are making decisions on a daily basis. And I think that the cleanest line that this court can set is not to get into this business of 29 units or 2 units or 5 units or 60 units, because I think that in today's modern age, a lot of retired people, a lot of disabled people, a lot of college students, a lot of people for economic reasons move into multifamily housing. And if we apply the Dunn factors to the place in which they live, all of those Dunn factors cut in favor of declaring that area curtilage, to say that the secure underground garage that the general public doesn't have access to is associated with the same affairs of a family life that a home garage would be associated with. The courts have used the word intimate, but I don't think the courts are referring to intimacy. The courts are referring to an area deserving some protection, some Fourth Amendment protection, because it's connected with the home. And in this case, Dumpster wouldn't have a leg to stand on if his car is parked outside in some remote area that the general public can go to. This is secure. Justice Ziegler had asked about the Conrad case. Just would offer that, as I see it on page 634 of 63 with second 633, the court was citing Watkins versus State. In that case, they had held that an officer could search a common storage room of an apartment house, and then this court said clearly within the curtilage So the court had said clearly that area would be within the curtilage. And the reason, Your Honor, that this court said the officers could clearly search the area was because the court was applying the Katz framework. Until Justice Scalia resurrected trespass, that was the operating rule. And I would agree that under that principle, because Katz was the analysis back then and he didn't have the same expectation of privacy, that search would be lawful. That search of clearly a curtilage area would not be lawful today under the trespass dimensions that have been set forth by the United States Supreme Court. Thank you.
I thank counsel for very, very good arguments today and an extremely interesting case. That concludes our argument on the case pending before us, and the court will meet in closed conference at 10 minutes past 3. Thank you. We are adjourned.